Is it possible to have the real-life Captain America or X-Men? Or is it possible to have superhuman abilities or conditions without editing your genes? Well, we'll be talking about that in this episode. Hi, I'm Alexandra.
And I'm Meredith.
And this is Under the Microscope.
In this podcast, we take a deep dive into fascinating science.
So let's take a closer look under the microscope. So the idea of this episode came from a discussion we had in biology class, and we were talking about genetics and just the idea of gene editing and that realm. And I remember there was this guy, and he was asking our teacher if it's possible to essentially kind of create a serum like in Captain America and create this like massive army, as you know, in the Marvel movies and stuff. And we had a really good discussion about that. So I was like, you know what? That's actually really interesting. We should really look at that.
Yeah, just see if there's superhumans found in real life.
Before we start talking about these really cool genetic abilities, I think we should set some terms and just define them so that when we're talking about mutations that we're all on the same page. So gene mutation is a mutation to the genetic code that changes the sequence of DNA. And like the, what would you call it? The amino acid sequence, essentially. And so a nonsense mutation is also called a detrimental mutation, which does not fulfill the normal function of a trait. And then a missense mutation is a beneficial mutation. So it's a change to the gene sequence to create a new variation of a trait, which is the ones that these mutations are. And then there's a silent mutation, which has no effect on the function of a gene.
So I started doing some research on some superhuman mutations, and basically these are just natural mutations that happen in people's bodies. And one of the first ones that stood out to me was super strength, because this is like something that Superman would have, so that was really cool. And so basically people have a mutation in the MSTN gene, and their muscles are already amped up due to a lack of myostatin. I think that's how you say it. So yeah, be aware, guys, this episode is going to be filled with mispronounced words because these are some complex vocabulary here. And basically, it's a protein that tells the muscles when to stop growing. And animals who lack the protein often grow large muscular bodies that contain very little fat. And in humans, this mutation allows one to reach a muscle mass double that of the average person and stay muscular without having to do much to keep it up. So you wouldn't even have to work out regularly and then be like super buff still.
I wonder if bodybuilders have this, you know, like those, like, because they have competitions for that. And I feel like, not like everyone needs, you know, the dedication, you know, the diet for that. But then I feel like at some point genetics has to play a role, because that's not human for someone to be that massive.
Yeah, to be that huge. And that would cause like an unfair advantage too.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So another, I guess, superhuman ability would be super speed, which is another characteristic a superhero would have.
Like Flash.
Oh yeah, like the Flash. And I think Superman is like super speed. Yeah, super strength. Yeah. So super speed, and I'm not just saying that, you know, to be fast you need to have this gene mutation, but there is the mutation to the ACTN3 gene, which codes for a protein which is like the alpha actinin 3. I don't know how to pronounce that, but anyway, it deals with the fast twitch fibers, and I think this is super interesting because I'm a sprinter and I see how fast people can get all the time. So sprinters train, or athletes train their fast twitch fibers to have explosive and fast movements. And so sprinters typically train these fibers to have explosive and powerful starts and to maintain a quick turnover, you know, throughout their race. And so scientists discovered this mutation in 2008, and geneticists studied sprinters, and a few of them had two defective copies of those genes. So most people have two defective copies of the ACTN3 gene, but it makes us question how many of the top athletes like Usain Bolt, Andre DeGrasse, and I guess maybe football players too. I don't really know, but just
maybe even you, Alex.
Maybe I have this mutation, but all these athletes who require fast movements and who really are that elite and who are really at the top, it really makes us question, do they have these conditions? Because it is so recent, so we cannot really we could test on it, but it's not necessarily super common to test people for these gene mutations because it's so specific. But I wonder if, you know, Usain Bolt, for example, does have this gene mutation.
And that's why he's so insanely fast.
Yeah, because he, like, if you look at the typical sprinter, they're so much shorter than he is. Like, they're like about five, like for men, it would be like 5'9 to like 5'11. Within that range, but he's above 6 feet tall, so already he's disadvantaged, and like he has these super long legs, super long torso, super long arms, but yet he is so fast.
I actually saw this funny video where Usain Bolt and Kevin Hart got in a race, but because Kevin Hart was shorter, he got an advantage and got to go further, like closer towards the finish line, and then he won, and Kevin Hart was like, I'm the fastest man in the world.
Yeah, I mean, but Kevin Hart's actually like pretty short though. So I don't know how much of a sprinting advantage he would get. But normally if you got someone of that height and then someone like the height of Usain Bolt, I feel like the person who is shorter would, you know, be faster.
Yeah. And so another one I found was uncanny flexibility.
Uncanny.
So this is like insane flexibility. And a lot of times these people will be like hired to be in like horror movies because it looks so weird. And basically, it's known as Marfan syndrome, and it's caused by a genetic mutation where a person has less connective tissue than they should. And our connective tissue keeps our limbs, organs, and other parts firmly in place. And those who have Marfan syndrome often have long limbs, piano fingers, and incredible flexibility. But those with the more pronounced cases can experience severe, even life-threatening complications to their heart or other organs and can affect their eyes, bones, and blood vessels. So even though it's cool to be super flexible, it could kill you to have this specific type of mutation.
Yeah, that's kind of freaky. But to go along with that, I don't know if you know who Sophie Dossie is.
No.
Anyway, I don't know if she's a gymnast or anything, but she was on America's Got Talent and she got the golden buzzer. But if you want, you can search her up. And I'm pretty sure she has a YouTube channel and everything. And she's insanely flexible. Like I don't know if she does archery with her feet or something like that.
I may have seen that.
Yeah, you definitely have seen one of her like videos of just her freaking people out in public and like driving with her feet or something.
What the heck?
Yeah, I wonder if she has that mutation because like that's not normal.
That's
like,
not normal.
It's,
no.
If you can drive,
that's not just doing yoga daily.
Yeah, that there's like a problem with that.
Yeah.
So another mutation that I guess that could make you super strong, having an increased bone density. So this is a mutation to the LRP5 gene. And essentially what happens is some mutations to this gene can either lower the bone density, which makes your bones more brittle and easier to break. But then on the other hand, this mutation can make bones more dense, which can essentially make them unbreakable. So I'm not sure if that's like a good thing to have super dense bones.
Yeah. I mean, I've broken bones a few times, so I'd rather I didn't break them personally. But
yeah,
I feel like that would cause, like, same thing with, like, the flexibility. I feel like it would cause some drawbacks that would affect you in a negative way.
I mean, I've never broken any bones, which I'm thankful. I feel like I fractured – actually, no, I know I fractured my finger, and that was pretty painful, so I don't really – know how painful breaking a bone would be. But I feel like if you have really dense bones, they're really hard to break, and you do accidentally break them, like, would that make it more painful?
And longer to heal too, right? Probably.
Yeah, I feel like true. Yeah, that would. Yeah.
So another interesting one I found was a resistance to poison. So imagine drinking enough arsenic to kill an ox. That's what these people do. So there's this small village in Argentina, and this is basically what they do every day. 6,000 of them drink from a water supply laced with 80 times the amount of arsenic needed to kill anyone.
Wait, they do this for fun?
No, that's like the water supply they have because it's poisoned.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so they've been drinking that same source for thousands of years, though. So just the people there have developed a mutation of the gene AS3MT, which helps push potentially dangerous substances out of their system. So because, like, the same people and, like, ancestors and generations have continued to live there, they've just grown this resistance to poison because they had to survive and to drink water.
I wonder if, you know Rasputin, do you know the story of him?
Yeah,
the song by Boney M. Yeah. So I know that, you know, the royal family of Russia tried to kill him multiple times. And one of them was they made him drink poison or eat poison.
But he was still alive afterwards, wasn't he?
Yeah. So he could have had this gene or he just, you know, flew
to from Argentina.
Is he? No. Oh, yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. Ancestors from Argentina. Yeah. Another, I guess this isn't really a gene mutation because this was more heavily, a doctor's essentially altered a gene, the CCR5 gene, and this gene is immune to HIV, and actually a small percent of Europeans have this gene, which is really interesting. But there was a doctor in China that made this mutation to a set of twins, and it was successful. So the twins were genetically modified to be immune to HIV. And this gene mutation, I guess, is better than the alternative, I guess, to, like, be genetically modified than been exposed to HIV for long periods of time, then eventually developing a resistance to that. But this does raise ethical concerns, though.
Yeah, this does raise. So I was looking a little bit into genome editing and at some of the new technology. But one of the main issues is, like, it hasn't been decided, like, what's ethical and what hasn't been. And that's, like, a conversation that the world needs to have with each other. Because it can be used to prevent stuff like HIV or even, like, cancer and heart disease. Like, things that we would be close to solving because we know so much about it already, would, like, cystic fibrosis, hemophilia, and sickle cell anemia. Like, we could be able to cure those if we had the ethical, like, pass, like, if we could go through it. But then once you get to that point where it's, like, so we're allowed to genetically edit them so they're not able to get these diseases. Well, what about if we want to change their intelligence or, like, increase their athletic ability? Because that's going to help them in life too. Or, like, how attractive they're going to be. So it gets to that, like, point where it's, like, how far are we able to go?
I mean, there are situations where, you know, if we do genetically modify certain parts of the DNA, it would be incredibly beneficial to our species. And I guess with this idea too, you really could build a super army of, you know, superhumans who have these abilities to be just out of this world, you know, have super strength, super speed, you know, the ability to resist or be immune to certain poisons, you know. That is really interesting.
So, yeah, one of the ways that they do it, and it's, like, the most technological, like, newest way to gene edit is the CRISPR-Cas9, which I originally heard about a while ago. So I decided to do some further research on it. And it allows genetic material to be added, removed, or altered at particular locations. That's, like, silent nonsense and missense. It can do pretty much anything. And it is, like, a pretty complex method, so I won't go too far into depth with it, but basically it is, like, the most precise, and it uses different proteins and enzymes in order to do it, and it can customize the DNA sequence perfectly and, like, basically hasn't had any problems so far, and, like, it, yeah, hasn't had any negative effects on anyone or, well, it hasn't been done on a person yet, but, but, yeah, it does seems to be the most effective so far because it doesn't make any mistakes.
Oh, that's interesting. Going back to we haven't tested it with humans. I know we have gene edited animals and like, you know, the liger where
The
they
liger.
yeah, where they combine the tiger and I was gonna yeah, and a lion. And that's really interesting, like having that hybrid. But then at the same time too, I bet you didn't know this, but we did that with food as well. We have gene edited certain foods to be more, I guess, I don't know how to explain it, but like for example, with corn, originally corn is actually tiny, but we've
Yeah.
gene edited it to be, you know, massive so we can eat it with our two hands. Or they do that with certain breeds of apples. I only know this because my dad's a agricultural scientist, so he talks about this stuff all the time. But they crossbreed different apples and they actually taste really good too. Like I remember a few months ago, I tasted this new species of apple, and it essentially tastes like candy, but you can chew
Oh,
with
that
it and
tastes
say, well,
good.
it's a fruit.
Well, it's a fruit, less calories,
Yeah.
right?
But the whole idea of gene editing, you do have to be very careful with it because there are organizations that do deal with these ethical considerations with modifying, you know, the genetic code with humans. So just, you know, keep that in mind when you hear about these discoveries on the news about, oh, we've found a cure for this if we, you know, modify someone's genome to do this, which, you know, you definitely have to be careful with that.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's definitely like so incredible being able to find, like, say, for example, HIV. We can create people who are immune to it, but then it's like, sorry, no, it's not considered ethical at this point. So it's kind of disappointing. And like, maybe for something that, you know, affects lives like even more dramatically, I feel like cancer and stuff like that,
Yeah,
then they
that's
might
true.
say, like, okay, maybe we should start to consider this. And there's one more super human thing I want to look at because this is probably my favorite, and this is probably the one I wish I had. And basically, you don't need sleep to require to get energy to be able to function throughout the day. You could just feel energized on like 4 hours of sleep each night, and they're just naturally that way because of this gene mutation they have. And so basically, it's a mutation in the HDEC2 gene, and they still need to do a lot more research on this. But if you carry this gene mutation, you just need like minimal sleep, and you can continue having short sleeping habits, and it'll run in the family too, because that gene will be passed on. And they want to be able to help harness this ability. So, but then once again, that's bringing us into the ethical concerns with it. Like, how are
Yeah,
you
that's
going to
true.
apply that?
Well, that pretty much wraps up our second episode of Under the Microscope, and we will be coming out with new episodes soon, so stay tuned for that.